Canto 7, Chapter 9, Text 33, Srimad Bhagavatam. Just so I have this straight, do you do the words individually or you just do the whole sentence? Or does it make any difference? What's that? Go for the whole thing. Okay. Tasyavateva puridam nija kala sakja. Tasyavateva puridam nija kala sakja. Sanchodita prakriti dharmana atmagudam. Sanchodita prakriti dharmana atmagudam. Ambasyananta sayanad viramat samadir. Ambasyananta shayanad viramat samadir. Nabhirabhutsva kanika vatavan mahabjam. Nabhirabhutsva kanika vatavan mahabjam. Tasyavate vapur idam nija kalasakya. Sanchodita prakriti dharmana atmagudam. Ambasyananta shayanad viramat samadir. Nabhir abhutsva kanika vatavan mahabjam. Tasyavate vapuridam nija kalashakcha. Sanchodita prakriti dharmana atmagudam. Ambasyananta shayanad viramat samadir. Nabhirabhutsva kanika vatavan mahabjam. Tasyavate vapuridam nijakala sakya. Sanchodita prakriti. Nabhirabhutsva nayakanika. Tasyavate vapuridam snijakala sakya. Sanchodita prakriti dhamana magudam. Nabhirabhutsva kanika vatavan mahabhajam. Ladies?
Tasyavateva puridam
Kala Sakya. Svakanika Vatavam Mahajvam. Children? Okay. Tasya, of that Supreme Personality of Godhead. Eva, certainly. Te, of you. Vapu, the cosmic body. Idam, this universe. Nijikala Shakya, by the potent time factor. Sanchodita, agitated. Prakriti, Dharmana, of him, by whom the three gunas, or qualities of material nature. Atmagudam, dormant in yourself. Ambasi, in the water, known as the causal ocean. Andantishan Shayanat, from the bed known as Ananta, another feature of yourself. Viramat Samade, having awakened from the samadhi, yogic trance. Nabhe, from the navel. Abut, appeared. Svakanika, from the seed. Vatavat, like the great banyan tree. Mahaabjam, the great lotus of the worlds, has similarly grown. Translation. This cosmic manifestation, the material world, is also your body. This total lump of matter is agitated by your potent energy known as Kala Shakti, and thus the three modes of material nature are manifested. You awaken from the bed of Sesha Ananta, and from your navel a small transcendental seed is generated. It is from this seed that the lotus flower of the gigantic universe is manifested, exactly as a banyan tree grows from a small seed. Please repeat. This cosmic manifestation, the material world, is also your body. This total lump of matter is agitated by your potent energy, known as Kala Shakti. And thus the three modes of material nature are manifested. You awaken from the bed of Sesha Ananta, and from your navel a small transcendental seed is generated. It is from this seed that the lotus flower of the gigantic universe is manifested, exactly as a banyan tree grows from a small seed. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The three different forms of Mahavishnu, namely Karanadakshai Vishnu, Garbhadakshai Vishnu, and Chiradakshai Vishnu, who are the origin of creation and maintenance, are gradually being described. From Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshai Vishnu is generated. And from Garbhadakshai Vishnu, Chiradakshai Vishnu gradually expands. Thus, Mahavishnu is the original cause of Garbhadakshai Vishnu, and from Garbhadakshai Vishnu comes the lotus flower from which Lord Brahma is manifested. Thus, the original cause of everything is Vishnu, and consequently, the cosmic manifestation is not different from Vishnu. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 10.8. wherein Krishna says, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Mataksarvam Pravartate. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. Garbhadakshai Vishnu is an expansion of Karanadakshai Vishnu, who is an expansion of Shankarshan. In this way, Krishna is ultimately the cause of all causes, sarva karna karnam. The conclusion is that both the material world and the spiritual world are considered to be the body of the Supreme Lord. We can understand that the material body is caused by the spiritual body and is therefore an expansion of the spiritual body. Thus, when one takes up spiritual activities, one's entire material body is spiritualized. Similarly, in this material world, when the Krishna consciousness movement expands, the entire material world becomes spiritualized. As long as we do not realize this, we live in the material world. But when we are fully Krishna conscious, we live not in the material world, but in the spiritual world. Translation once again. This cosmic manifestation, the material world, is also your body. This total lump of matter is agitated by your potent energy known as Kala Shakti, and thus the three modes of material nature are manifested. You awaken from the bed of Sesha, Ananta, and from your navel a small transcendental seed is generated. It is from this seed that the lotus flower of the gigantic universe is manifested, exactly as a banyan tree grows from a small seed. Om Agyana Timarandasya Ganagana Salakaya Chaksuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Well, we all know it's all one. Yes, we all knew that before we became devotees, didn't we? It's all one. And actually, in one sense, we were right. Or at least, I don't know. I can't say we, because I'm just taking a small sample of the people whom I was associating with at that time. Oh, you can't hear me? I've never had anyone complain about not being able to hear me. I shouldn't mention this, but right before I became a devotee, there was a little group of friends that included Pushta Krishna and Raghavendu, Aja, Gaudi. We were all college friends, schoolmates. Actually, Pushta Krishna and Raghavendu and myself were in the same college fraternity. We lived in the same fraternity house. And then later on, I lived with Raghavendu in the student ghetto at the University of Florida. And we used to speculate and get together and party. And we would speculate and on the nature of the universe and the purpose of life and God and death and so forth. And most everyone came to the conclusion that it's all one, in the sense that there's this big bright light out there someplace. Many of my friends, or many of people whom I knew, had seen this white light. Now, I don't know what that white light was. I'm not going to assume that it was actually a Brahma Jyoti induced by some chemical stimulant. But I saw it. And I didn't like it. I said, that's not for me. I don't want to give up my individuality because I'm me and I want to stay who I am. That was, of course, my false ego, a manifestation of my false ego. And I wasn't ready to merge into that big white light, that effulgence, which was very alluring. It was very attractive. But I could not give up my personal sense of identity of who I was, and therefore I said, you guys can have it. I don't want it. You can just go wherever you want. So obviously, when I found out that God is a person, then I was quite happy about that. I said, this sounds pretty good. I like this. And that not only is God a person, but every single living being Every single living entity within this universe is always a person, and that we never have to give up that identity. That was the good part. The bad part was that there was a supreme person, and that we all had to surrender to the wishes and to the instructions of the supreme person and his representative. But this Krishna consciousness movement, this series of verses with the expansions, I have to also offer a disclaimer. This is just like we in school, we all had these these courses that we were never very good at. Math and science were never my forte. In biology, when you had that little chart and you put the X chromosome and the Y chromosome in there and you have to come out with some formula of this or that, I could never even figure that out. I could never even get past geometry. So I have to admit, in over 40 years, I've never been able to get these expansions straight. I've never been able to really remember them and keep them all in order. And this one comes from that one, and that one comes from this one, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Shankarshan, yeah. It's just been always one of those subject matters that I was never meant to really become very proficient at. So therefore, Prabhupada had the brilliant idea for us illiterates, me, myself, not others, that he would build this incredible planetarium in Mayapur, India. And that is actually under construction as we speak. And hopefully all of these things with the different expansions and the origin of the universe and how it all comes into being, and Brahma comes out of the navel of Karana Dakshai Vishnu, and he sprouts out of this lotus flower. What's that? Garbha Dakshai Vishnu. See, there we go. There we go. Perfect example. That'll all be explained in this beautiful new museum, planetarium, temple of science that's being built, and people from all over the world. And it's really quite amazing to think, and I was actually thinking about it the other day, not to stray too far from the verse, which I'll get back to in a minute. But Prabhupada many times refers to Navadvip and Mayapur as these very remote places. And they are very remote. Anybody who's ever been there, even today, it's such an adventure that you literally never know for sure whether you're going to get there and back or not. It's just a harrowing experience in that drive from Calcutta to Mayapur. But somehow or other, by Prabhupada's vision, this is going to soon be the center of the entire universe, Mayapur. Thousands and thousands and thousands of miles away from what we consider this modern civilization of the United States of America and Europe and so forth. That will be the center of the universe. And when that temple opens, there are going to be news media from all over the world to cover that opening. I'm sure the president of India or the prime minister of India, every big government official from all over India will be there, reporters from every newspaper, television, they will all be there to cover that. And I cannot imagine how even now, when during Gaur Purnima festival, when there are literally probably millions of people pour through that temple every week, every month, just a nonstop ocean of pilgrims coming to Mayapur. I don't know where they all come from myself. I can't figure it out. I mean, there must be a lot of Bengalis. Because that temple is simply packed, and the bigger they make it, the more it's never big enough, because more and more people keep coming. And once they get this planetarium built, which will have all this scientific information for those who are inclined in that direction, then it's going to be an enormous probably one of the biggest wonders of the world. It could very easily become the eighth wonder of the world. Going to surpass the Taj Mahal. Anything in India is going to dwarf in comparison to what that temple is going to be. And I was thinking, how are they all going to get there? It's going to be it's going to be very interesting to see what kind of infrastructure they're able to build in India to accommodate the millions and tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people from all over the world that are going to want to come see that. Because we can see that when New Vrindavan, many years ago, when they had the Palace of Gold, there were hundreds of thousands of people coming to see this Palace of Gold every year. And there were tour buses and so forth, and it was very, very popular. It was in all these tourist guides, and it was just getting bigger and bigger and bigger until some bad things happened at New Vrindavan and people stopped going. But now it's coming back again. But it was getting very popular. So this is going to be one of the biggest attractions in the entire planet, where people from all over the world are going to visit this museum. This planetarium, which is something that Prabhupada wanted. He wanted this from the very, very beginning of his mission. And right here in Los Angeles, he had many, many famous walks, morning walks on Venice Beach, where we have Ratha Yatra every year with Swarup Damodar Maharaj and other ISKCON scientists. That he was teaching them over and over and over again. Life comes from life. Life comes from life. Teaching them all of the different aspects of this simple formula that life comes from life. He wanted the Bhaktivedanta Institute, and even told the BBT, don't put any limits on the funding for this project. Didn't he always say that? Whatever they want, give it to them. Because that Prabhupada knew that was the key to conquering this entire planet, what to speak of the Western countries, because India now is simply as bad as America. It's simply in every way as bad as the Western countries. The difference between India and America, where Prabhupada has put a great deal of responsibility on the Indians, those who take birth in India. He said, this is your mission. You have taken birth in the land of Krishna, the place where Krishna was born. And it is your mission to spread this philosophy, to spread this knowledge all over the world. But now India is importing all of the Anarthas from the West instead of exporting the ancient wisdom of the Bhagavad Gita. So it's actually something that's meant for the entire planet. And we know from recent events that the Indian economy has been very robust. It's one of the strongest in the world until recently, and there's a great deal of economic development and industrialization, and Indians are able to get into the United States, where other ethnic groups have difficulties getting visas, getting green cards. This Indians automatically. Why? Because the Indians are so, they excel in the sciences, engineering, computer science, physics, these kind of areas. So the United States government wants all these people here. They let them in. And of course, the Indian population in America is becoming quite strong. It's becoming very influential. But the point of this verse, getting back to it, is that Krishna is the origin of everything, and everything is ultimately an expansion of Krishna. There are all kinds of expansions. I just know a few of them. I know that Radharani is an expansion of Krishna. That's about the main one that I'm aware of. Because Krishna, as it's stated, as Prabhupada states, Ishvara Parama Krishna, Sachidananda Vigraha, Anadir Adir Govinda, Sarva Karna Karnam. Krishna is Adi Purusham. He is the original person. And when Krishna wants to enjoy, he has one expansion. Here, in this verse, we have We have Vasudev, Shankarsham, Adiruddha, Pradyumna, etc., etc. They all come from Balaram. Balaram is another plenary immediate expansion of Krishna. And those expansions come, the subsequent expansions, they come from Balaram. And they're unlimited. There's no limit to them. There's expansions of expansions of expansions of expansions of expansions. But there's only one pleasure potency. There's only one expansion of Krishna's pleasure potency. And that's Srimati Radharani. Because Krishna himself, this blue form of Krishna, this bluish form of Krishna that we see, this dark blue form, that Krishna never leaves Goloka Vrindavan. He never leaves. He doesn't go anywhere. He doesn't get his hands dirty. He doesn't get involved in all these expansions and creating this and manifesting that and turning on this and shutting off that and winding up this and then, you know, pouring it all back out again. He doesn't get involved in all that nasty stuff. Of course, I shouldn't say it's nasty because it's all part of the process. But Krishna himself is always present in Vrindavan, engaged in his eternal pastimes with his loving devotees, headed by Srimati Radharani, who is in a category all by herself. There is no one that can equal the category of Srimati Radharani. But Radharani does represent something very important because she is the pleasure potency of the Supreme Lord. And everybody is seeking that pleasure. And that's really where the defect comes in. That's where all the problems start. Krishna is enjoying this unlimited, inconceivable pleasure with Radharani. And, of course, amongst the gopis, there is a lot of, to put this delicately, a little competition, let's say. The gopis are always competing for Krishna's attention. They're always competing for Krishna's affection and to get Krishna alone. And that's actually how Srimati Radharani, Srimati Tulsi Devi came into being. She was originally one of the principal gopis who also happened to be simultaneously a partial expansion of Srimati Radharani. Her name was Viraj. And she was a gopi. And one day, her and Krishna were flirting with each other. And so they had a rendezvous late at night in a forest, in some forest in Vrindavan, and Radharani heard about this. And Radharani has another side of her as well. Don't get Srimati Radharani mad at you, or you could get yourself in serious trouble, very serious trouble. So Viraj, very innocently, Krishna invited her. She, what are you going to do? How do you turn down Krishna? So she met Krishna that night, and Radharani's spies found out about this and ran back and said to Radharani, Krishna and Viraj are... they are together alone in the forest. And so Radharani got quite angry. She went running to the forest and caught them. And she got so mad that she cursed Viraj to take birth in the material world. And at the same time, there happened to be someone else, another player in all of this, Sudam, the original cowherd boy, Sudam, who is also a partial expansion of Krishna. So Radharani was berating Krishna, chastising Krishna about having this rendezvous with Viraj. And even after she had cursed Viraj, who later on, and that's a whole different story that we can talk about on the appropriate occasion, she took birth in the material world. She married, I'll get to that in a second. Sudam was Krishna's best friend. And so Radharani's chastising Krishna, and she won't stop. So Krishna's smiling, okay, whatever. And Sudama, he's watching this and listening to it, and he said, I can't take this anymore. So he says, stop, you don't do this. This is Krishna, stop. And Radharani looks at him and says, you just made a big mistake. She cursed him. Of course, Sudama had a crush on Viraj. That's the backstory, so to speak. He was always attracted to Viraj. And he wanted to marry her, and he really had a thing for her. But when he got Radharani angry, she cursed him. So, oh, you're going to stick your nose in? And, okay, so you can go take birth in the material world also. So she cursed him, and he had to take birth in the material world as Sankachuta, a demon in India. So to make a long story short, Tulsi married Sankachuta. She got a benediction when she was cursed that she would get Krishna for her husband, Lord Narayan. That's how Narayan and Tulsi, the marriage of Narayan and Tulsi, that whole story. But before she married Narayan, she was married to Sankachuta, who was Sudam. And Sudam was killed by Lord Shiva in a glorious battle that rivals anything in the Mahabharata or Ramayana in terms of its excitement and adventure. Kali herself participated in this battle, and there are certain portions where she was just eating the enemy soldiers, just picking them up and devouring them, and their bones and their everything were just shattering her in her mouth, and she was just laughing. She was just having a great time. She was enjoying it. But because Sankachuta had some certain benedictions, he could not be killed. He could not be killed unless certain conditions were met, which I won't go into. The point is that Krishna is involved in these pastimes in the spiritual world, and he never leaves Goloka Vrindavan. He delegates all these things. He delegates all these things to Lord Balaram, and then Lord Balaram delegates these things to all these other expansions. Krishna is like the engineer. Prabhupada just given the example. Krishna is like the engineer at the electrical plant or the power plant, whatever kind of energy they're using. And he goes in, he turns on the switch, and then everything automatically begins to operate. But he doesn't himself get involved in all this. And we are also expansions of Krishna. We should not forget that. Sometimes that's why we're here, by the way, is because we are the marginal potency of the Lord, the three different energies, the internal, the external, and the marginal. Internal being the spiritual potency, external being matter, marginal being us. We are the marginal potency because we are like these tiny little rays of sunshine emanating from the sun, these little particles of sunshine. But because, and we have all of the qualities, all of these spiritual qualities, we have them all. We also want pleasure. We are also, everyone in this material world is also seeking the same pleasure that Krishna is having with Radharani and the gopis in the spiritual world. And somehow or other, and I don't know how this all happened, I can just imagine, because of our free will that we all have, we saw that, oh, Krishna, he gets to enjoy with Radharani, and all these gopis are just, they have crushes on him, and they want to be with him, and even the cowherd boys and the cows and the animals and the trees and the parents, and nobody cares about their own children. All they think about is Krishna. Why aren't they thinking about me? I mean, what about me? Where do I fit into this picture? See, as long as one is always thinking everything is for Krishna, and that's how they think in the spiritual world. And I can say they because I'm certainly not them. So I can say them and me. They only think about Krishna all the time, every minute of the day, whether it's sleeping, eating, picking flowers, milking cows, whatever it may be, their mind is constantly 100% of the time absorbed in Krishna. Oh, when will I see Krishna? When will I be with Krishna? What can I get for Krishna? That's their mentality. And we become envious of that. Oh, Krishna's getting all this pleasure. Krishna's getting all of this enjoyment. Well, there should be a little bit to go around. Why doesn't he share some of it? I should get some of that pleasure. As soon as that mentality enters our consciousness, that's it. We're done. Just like when the clouds cover that portion of the sky, it gets very dark and the sun is blocked out. And even though the sun is still there, the sun hasn't gone anywhere. The sun is still there. The sky is still blue. Everything else is going on. But we are in this cloud and we can't see anything. We think, and then we make up, then we fabricate this entire world within the darkness. The material world is dark. It's dark. That's why Thomas Edison is so famous. How do you think he got so famous? Because he invented a light bulb. What to speak of the Brahmajyoti, from which everything is illuminating everything, but because we became envious of Krishna, we wanted to touch that pleasure. Everyone is seeking that Brahmananda, that unlimited pleasure is called Brahmananda. That's what everybody is looking for. All the yogis, the karma yogis, the astanga yogis, the jnana yogis, that's what they all want to touch. They want a little piece. They want a taste of that enjoyment. They want to taste that pleasure. So when we get to this material world, that's what we're here for. We're here to accumulate or acquire that pleasure for ourselves. But unfortunately, it doesn't quite work that way. Because the material world is it's a place of birth, death, disease, and old age. Krishna doesn't want us to be here. He lets us come here. He gives us the choice, but it's not his choice that we make the wrong choice. He's not happy about that. Just like the parents, when their children do bad things, and everybody knows what they are, that's a parent. I don't have to go into those details. The parent doesn't want the child to do those things, but the child grows up, the child develops a mind of its own. And what are you going to do? How are you going to stop your kid that's 6'5" and 250 pounds? What are you going to do? You're going to give him a spanking? A timeout? It doesn't quite work that way. It has to be simply to learn that lesson on their own. And Krishna creates this material world to teach us by the circumstances, by the paraphernalia of this material world and the infrastructure of this material world, that everybody has to learn the lesson that this is a place of birth, death, disease, and old age. And Prabhupada gives the example. It's like it looks very appealing. It's very seductive, especially here in a place like Los Angeles. It's very seductive in a place like Los Angeles. And the emphasis that's put on all of these forms of material enjoyment is just simply unlimited. It's enormous. It's overwhelming. And so, therefore, this is probably compares this to, here, eat this rasgulla, or eat this burfi or sandesh. And as soon as you finish, as soon as you swallow it, then the person who gave you that rasgulla or that burfi takes off their shoe and starts beating you over the head. That is the material world. That is the material world. Here, have this rasgulla. Have this beautiful woman. Have this handsome, virile man. Have this beautiful mansion. Have this beautiful car. They package. The packaging is so sophisticated that when you watch a commercial or look at a billboard, it's just so, it seems to be so appealing. Oh, that looks so good. I want to taste that. I want to be with this woman. I want to be with this man. I want to eat that food. I want to drink that alcohol. I want to go to Las Vegas and win all this money and so many other things. And they package it, and Maya makes it so appealing. She makes it so enticing that everyone gets completely captivated by this phantasmagoria. But then as soon as they do, she takes off her shoe and starts beating everybody, beating them over the head with the shoe. With what? Birth, death, disease, and old age. And I was just reading, Prabhupada was describing what it's like to be in the womb. Birth is the first stage, of course. And Prabhupada does not paint a very appealing description of life in the womb. Imagine that you're in a plastic bag and you have no room to move, and there's one little tiny hole for air, one little pin hole that you can breathe, and there's bugs in there. I don't like to say these things, but you know, I'm not making anything up. Prabhupada says there's germs, there's bugs, there's worms, there's things in the food, and they're biting the fetus, and the fetus can't breathe, and he or she is just packed up in this tight little container and suffering immensely, very, very painful. And finally, even that, even though that living entity made a decision, I want to go to the material world because I want what Krishna has, and if this is what I have to go through to get it, well, so be it. I'll do that. But when they're in the womb, they have second thoughts. Krishna, please just let me out of here. I'll do anything you want. Just get me out of here. I can't take it here anymore. Because imagine if you had to go back to the womb now. Forget the biological intricacies of doing that. Some womb-like situation, if you had to go back into that kind of a situation, Prabhupada said you'd die. You would die under those circumstances. We can't do it anymore. But by Krishna's arrangement, that little living entity is able to survive for that 9 months in the womb under tremendously terrible, painful conditions, and prays, finally, let me out of here, please, God. I'll do anything you say. I won't do this. I won't do that. I'll do, you know how it goes. You know, and something bad happens. Oh, God, please take it back. You know, I'll do it. I'll be good. I swear I won't drink. I won't smoke anymore. I'll stop all my bad habits, how that goes. Finally, the living entity comes out of the womb. Then there's a period of time where it's still kind of painful. It's still kind of uncomfortable. Not quite as bad. But still there's stomach this and gas and, oh, you know, all these things. And the baby's crying and everybody's trying to figure out what's wrong with Jimmy, what's wrong with Savas, little Savas or something like that, you know. What's he crying about now? Or Amala Bhakta, what's he crying about now? What's wrong? Give him this. Give him the pacifier. Eventually, he grows up, and all the relatives, she becomes this cute little butterball. And everybody's, oh, look at little Savas. Look at little Sachidanoy. I wish I could say that about you, Archita, but it just doesn't work. You know? And they bounce the little baby on the knee, and they do this and they do that, and the baby thinks, oh, this is great. I love it. This is wonderful. Look at all these people. I'm finally getting all of this attention. This is what I wanted. This is why I came here. Okay, I had to go through a little tapasya to get here. But here I am, and all these people are giving me all this attention, and they're taking all these pictures, and they're posting it on Facebook, and they're putting it on Instagram, and they're doing you know, making videos and sending it to all the relatives, and everybody's getting compliments, and, oh, this is great. This is wonderful. And then the little living entity, the person grows up a little bit more. But there's another element besides birth, death, disease, and old age. Adiatmic, adibhotic, and adivitaivic. So you get at school, okay, things aren't so good there. Somebody may be picking on me. I may have big ears. And I can speak from personal experience. Used to call me Dumbo. I'm not making that up. It's one of my childhood traumas. And though when I grew up, that short hair was very fashionable. My father used to take me to the barber shop. I don't know what they're called anymore. Haircutters, stylist, and the barber would take out the clippers and just, it was gone. And there were my ears sticking out in the mirror. And I go, oh, God. And I would fight with my father every time it was time to go to the barber. I would disappear for days when I knew I had to go get a haircut because the other kids would tease me about it. And I'd get in fights. There'd be a, you know, call me these names, and I'd fight with the kid and get beat up or beat the other kid up. And it was miserable. It was no fun. I was so happy when the hippie thing came along. Because somebody said, just grow your hair out, just wash it, and then shake it, and just leave it alone. And so that was that. Nobody ever saw my ears again until for 8 years or something, whatever it was. Actually, it wasn't that long. 68, 71, whenever I met Prabhupada. And then I thought, oh, God, I have to shave my hair off again. Oh, no. I had second thoughts about joining the movement at that point. I wasn't sure I was ready for that, to go through all that again. But nonetheless, the point is that there's all of these kinds of external forces. This body is always giving us problems, one kind of problem or another. It gets sick. It gets diseased. Other living entities, bullies and so forth, are picking on us for one reason or another. The elements, which we hear a lot about today, natural disasters, hurricanes, fires, and speaking of other living entities, terrorists, jihadists, all this other stuff that's going on in the world today. We have to go through all this. And then ultimately, some of you get old, and then you start feeling the eyesight, the joints, not Amalabhakta, though. Amalabhakta is eternally youthful. I want everyone to know this. He has a spiritual body, and he is not old, because no one that age could do what he does. So he's an exception to the rule, because he has spiritualized himself in this lifetime. But just imagine, aside from Amalabhakta, look what Prabhupada was able to do. Look what he was able to overcome at such an advanced age, coming over on the ship, how many heart attacks, very, very severe seasickness, 69 years old, 70 years old, starting a movement from scratch at such an advanced age. Even when he was here, he had still had health problems. Of course, for the pure devotee, he's transcendental to all these things. He's not affected by all of these things. But nonetheless, most of us, such as myself, as we get older, we can't do these things anymore. We can't run as fast. We can't think as fast. We forget all the time. Other things stop working sooner or later. The one thing that never stops working, though, is desire. The desire never goes away unless you become Krishna conscious. The desire is always there. And then, actually, we have some devotees that are hospice nurses. Divya Drishti is a hospice nurse, and the two Divyas, the one in Santa Barbara and the one here. Bhagwat's wife. What's that? Whose wife? Reuben Hooker's wife also. Okay, so there's more. And they'll tell you, probably describes it that they, at the death, no matter who you are, when they sometimes go into a coma. And they're dreaming. And they're dreaming about the Yamadutas, and sometimes they're crying out because they see the Yamadutas coming to get them. And the whole point of all this is that what science does, this is the pernicious aspect of material science, what science does is tries to adjust all of these things, these threefold miseries, birth, death, disease, and old age. Science creates all of the things that we want to enjoy this material world. Science gives us all these things, just like I was reading in the news recently. Have some stories about the news, but I won't go into that because we're always already getting close to the limit. But they've found a new additive in meat that makes it very addictive in the meat that they put in the meat. Just like they found in the cigarettes, they put an additive in the cigarettes that makes it addictive, that people can't stop smoking because they put things into it. So that's what these scientists do. They manufacture all these things to make them so people become addicted to them. And that's what the scientists do. They make it so that we can eat better, we can sleep better, we can mate better, and we can defend better. That's the purpose of science. Simply how to enjoy this material body to the limit. As much as we can squeeze out of this material body, science is always coming up with different ways, different inventions, different this, different that, so how we can enjoy more and more and more. But there's just one problem with all that. The scientists have never been able to bring a dead body back to life. We know all the chemicals. They know what all the chemicals are. They know how they've studied this body from top to bottom, inside out, dissected it for centuries, and they know all these things. But they cannot reverse the aging process. You can go buy all your creams at Macy's or Beverly Hills on Rodeo Drive, these anti-aging things, and get your Botox and squirt it up and all this stuff. And you can have the illusion, oh, yeah, I'm young again. Look in the mirror. Look how young I am. My lips, my face, they're gone, the wrinkles. But no, the time factor works on. The time factor continues. The time factor inexorably marches on and on and on. And the scientists, for all of the advancement, and there is a lot of advancement. I mean, whoever dreamed of the internet and these things, these drones and everything else that they use, no one could ever imagine these things 25, 30 years ago, but here we are. But what is the point? What is the point of it all? It's simply useless because they have still not eradicated disease. As soon as they get rid of one disease, another one comes along to take its place. They can still not reverse the aging process. They can camouflage it with all of these different devices. And ultimately, they cannot bring a dead body back to life. Even though they know every single chemical, they know every single element, every single ingredient that goes in to comprise the nature of the material body, but despite all of this so-called advancement, they cannot take this, bring me this prescription for this, shoot it up into the body, and the body, boom, back to life. They can't do that. They can't do that. So, if you want to know about all the expansions, my recommendation is visit Mayapur or talk to somebody who's very, very conversant with the second chapter. If you want to know about the expansions that really affect us in our daily lives, it's so interesting because whatever the occasion, Prabhupada would always lecture on the same thing, whatever it was. I know, I see the clock. I'm going to end it. Don't worry. You didn't tell me what the verse was, so I get penalty points. No matter what the situation, it always comes back to the same thing: the internal potency, the external potency, the marginal potency. Our mission and the purpose of Krishna consciousness is to lift free ourselves of this misconception that we are this external potency, that is where we belong, that is our home, that we really, our place is there to get rid of this envy by this process of purification, become a pure devotee of Krishna, follow the instructions of the spiritual master, and then we can go back and then have these things unlimitedly, eternally, forever and ever, without any of the other shoes and other devices that go along with it. So my time is up. I think I've made my point as well as I can make. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.